In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Welcome to On the Bench, the second, not third, not fourth, not first either, second most popular FSU podcast. Thank you to everyone for giving us those five-star reviews and putting up with shenanigans over the years while we kind of found our groove a little bit. Guys, let's give ourselves a round of applause a little. Yeah. I like it. All right, we're coming for your ass, Bud Elliott. You hear that? We're coming for it. come to take the crown off the king. All right, I am Brendan Sinone. I got Josh Newberg and Chris Nee with me today. I'm going to focus on two different areas. One, recruiting, go over a few of the positions of needs and how those boards have shifted in the last few days. And they have changed fairly drastically, or at least expanded, I should say, in about the past week or so with some new offers at defensive end and offensive line. We're going to get into that. And then we're also going to allow ourselves to do a little bit of a focus on the 2020 season. I know that seems far away and we don't know like if it's happening or not. But right now we're going under the mindset that, yeah, it's happening full steam ahead. And we're going to go over some of our top 40 most important player predictions as well. I know Josh is thrilled to do that. So I'm going to try to get Josh while I got him right now before we lose him. Joshua, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. How you doing?
Dandy. We got the defensive end board. It's expanded quite a bit in the last week. And before we go into the reasonings behind that, and I want to go to get both your guys' thoughts on some of the new offers that have gone out. Josh, you dropped a nice crystal ball. I think one that got a lot of the folks excited starting off the week right on Monday. Shambre Jackson, the four-star defensive end from Orlando, Florida. Put him in one for the good guys there. Would you like to explain why you decide to go ahead and drop your ball there for good old Shambre?
Yeah, it was Monday. Needed some action, so So I made the pick, but Jackson, you know, he's the number 222nd best player overall, number 17 ranked strong side defensive end in the country, and he tweets about Florida State more than most commits tweet about Florida State. Not only that, but Chris Nee did a update on Knowles 24/7 on him, I think on Sunday, where Shambre said that he talks to FSU not just regularly, but every day. And I'd been sitting on the fence about putting a crystal ball in for Jackson only because he has not set a decision date. In the interview he did with Chris, he still said that the plan is to decide sometime during his senior season. So I thought, you know what? Now is as good a time of any. This is more of a projection pick, but it's something that I've been sitting on for a while. I'm hearing good things about where Florida State stands with Jackson. I don't think a commitment is imminent, but I do feel confident that when he does make his decision, that it's going to be Florida State.
Yeah, and to add a little bit of context, when I spoke to him, I still think the battle here is Alabama, Auburn, FSU is kind of the top three. He's a little bit more open than three schools, but those are the three that I know are definitely solidly in this, that he has a mutual interest in. With regards to FSU, his daily contacts with Odell Higgins, we all know when Odell truly sinks his teeth into a kid that he wants, especially an in-state kid, he tends to have good results with that. He's a talented defensive end. He's got a body type that could develop into something bigger, but I'm not going to dive too deep into that. I think right now he's a strong side defensive end for Florida State who has the potential of sliding inside later in his career if his body continues to develop.
Yeah, I think he probably ends up inside, but I don't want to get too caught up in that debate because FSU has major needs at defensive end and defensive tackle. So if Shambre does come, he's filling one of those needs, whether it be inside or outside. I personally think he ends up on the inside at defensive tackle, but we'll have plenty of time to debate that moving forward.
I know right now, for what it's worth, Florida State views him as a defensive end, but like you guys said, he very well could change.
Yeah, major needs in either position, so it's not worth arguing about.
Yeah, and I find, like, you know, for example, we wrote about a kid yesterday who FSU's recruiting as a Fox, and people fall in love with the terminology of the position that they call their primary. But in this day and age of defensive football, front seven is front seven, and there's a lot of versatility built into that. Obviously, a D-tackle is different than an outside linebacker. But as far as a DN and an outside linebacker, a lot of similarities. As far as potentially a DN and a D-tackle, sometimes a lot of similarities. I think people need to cool their jets a little bit on falling in love with the terminology of specifically what we call a guy. Shombre Jackson is a wide-bodied kid. That's why people think he can develop into a D-tackle. But he's also not so heavy and slow at this point that he can live at defensive end too. So that's why the talk of both positions comes up with him.
We saw this a lot with FSU under Jimbo Fisher, where they would recruit someone who was maybe an edge defender at the high school level and end up playing linebacker, like inside linebacker in college, or vice versa. And FSU is kind of going with a similar hybrid front under Adam Fuller. So I think that's worth noting. Like Brandon Jennings, right now I know people are saying, oh, Fox or middle linebacker. Like, sure, why not both? I mean, why not see kind of what he develops into at Florida State? The fact that you think that highly of him is the important aspect of how you gauge his recruitment. One more note on Shombre Jackson, to Josh's point about his Twitter game. In addition to the tweets, like I always say, follow the follows. Go ahead and look at, like, his last 50 follows. A good probably 15 of them are Florida State. Not that he's – it's, like, overwhelming majority for Florida State, but Florida State, either commitments or coaches or, like, Josh Storms is in there. And Carlos Lachlan's in there. So, like, the assistant guys, those guys are pretty – high up on his list of recent follows. So I think that's worth noting. All right, let's go to the recent offers at defensive end. FSU is casting a fairly wide net right now. Let me look here. I want to see who I want to start with. Josh, I'm going to go with Byron Turner from New Orleans. Sure. They offered him yesterday. And did you know that he plays at the same high school that Coach David Yak Johnson used to coach at? Were you aware of that?
I did. And Byron Turner, he's a 6'3.5", 237-pound pass rusher. He's a 2021 recruit, like you said, kind of casting a wider net here, offering some new guys. 392nd ranked player overall. I spoke to Byron Turner. He has a top 12 that came out on May 17. You can pretty much scrap that because he's gonna release a top six probably in the next couple weeks. It sounds like I expect Florida State to make that list. When I spoke to Turner, he was exceptionally high on Florida State because growing up, his father watched a lot of FSU football. So he said he just kind of grew up with FSU on the TV and was a fan. He's going to narrow that down to a top six and said that he would like to make a decision before his senior season, which is interesting because he's not going to be able to take any visits. He acknowledged that. Said he wants to make that decision before his senior season begins and then take a couple visits in the fall if he's able to. So he's one to keep an eye on. I'll probably reach back out in a week or two and see if he's ready to drop that top six.
Okay, Nee Kyron Montgomery from the Midwest. So they've actually offered a few guys from the Midwest at different positions lately. And I'm not sure what the ties are to that area. It's kind of surprising to me. But anyways, you wrote about that offer. What do you know about Kyron and where FSU stands for him right now?
He's a three-star weak side defensive end from Indianapolis, Indiana Pike High School. John Papuchas reached out via telephone on 28th and offered him. He's a taller, lean defensive end, 6'4", 215 are his listed measurements. I don't know on a weight being specific, but he is of that height. He has around 25 offers with FSU jumping in the boat, but before FSU hopped in, it was Arizona State, Boston College, Minnesota, Missouri, Penn State, Purdue were some of the main ones. I know BC is a school that he really likes from what I was told when FSU got involved in this recruitment. He named that top six I just listed off in late May. I asked him specifically, does the FSU offer put him among that group now? And he said they're definitely in. Right now, no predictions on the crystal ball. I don't have a great read on his recruitment. I don't think he's in a massive rush, but I do think that he has a better relationship with BC, Penn State, a few of those types before FSU. I asked him about a virtual visit. He said he believed something would get set up soon, but he didn't know anything specifically about that. productive kid on the field. I mean, as a junior, he had almost 100 tackles at 99, had 22 tackles for loss, 5 sacks. So he's a guy that can get after. He's got good speed off the edge. I think it's showing a continuation that they understand that they need multiple bodies at the defensive end position, and they need guys that are kind of different types too, type we're seeing them offer.
You mentioned, Chris, relationships in his recruitment, and obviously when you're starting to offer kids, you know, at this point in the summer, you're catching up a little bit. And one guy who I think I'm going to transition to and is important with when we're talking about relationships is Thomas Davis, the 3-star defensive end from Valdosta that was just offered late yesterday evening. Someone who I think most covering recruiting kind of thought like he's destined for Miami at this point. The narrative on our message board was, oh, why'd you wait so late to offer? Is it too late to offer a kid that's, you know, less than 100 miles away from you? Your thoughts on the timing of that offer? Is it too late? Curious to get your thoughts on that, Chris.
Well, he's the Region 1 7A Defensive Player of the Year, South Georgia kid. Super productive last year, 11.5 sacks on the season, also had 47 tackles. He's viewed kind of as a hybrid. He's an outside linebacker. FSU likes him for the Fox position. I clarified that with him yesterday when we spoke. He spoke with John Papuchis yesterday, who extended the offer to him. I do think FSU's too late here as of right now, and that's not in the sense of, oh, they should have offered months ago. It's more in the sense of Miami's more ingrained here. Mm-hmm. Miami is the favorite. When he went to Jacksonville for the Elite Underclassmen Combine about 2 weekends ago now, he spoke about Miami being his favorite over Indiana and South Carolina. I think FSU has a chance of being among that group, but Miami's pretty strongly firm there with him. I asked him if he'd ever visited FSU before. He has not gotten back to me on that. I asked him about a virtual visit. He hasn't gotten back to me on that. He's not a kid that usually talks a lot. His plan is to commit on August 24th as of right now. I think it will be Miami as of right now. Obviously, some work can be done there, but he very much likes Miami. He's hit it off with Coach Diaz and his staff. I just think that's where he stands. Was FSU late on this? I mean, he's a South Georgia kid, so people are going to say proximity. You shouldn't have known. I think they've known about him. I think they've just been hesitant to offer. I don't know if that truly makes him late. I don't know if Thomas Davis is a guy that's a solution to all their problems, like people want to make it out to be. Should they have offered and maybe slow played him? Sure, you can do that too while you try to figure it out. But I don't know. I'm not diving into the pool of, oh, my God, they're so late with this. I think it's sort of foolish. I don't think Thomas Davis, and I like Thomas Davis. He's a guy that I threw out on the message board, I think about 2 weeks ago now, as someone who at the linebacker position / defensive end, I felt like they could look at and go on. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I don't think highly of him. I definitely do. It's more a matter of, I just don't know if he was such a no-brainer that you don't, like, if you're not sure, you don't offer a kid. Especially a local kid. You don't want to offer a kid at Lowndes that you don't want to take and then get into the conundrum of him wanting to commit and you saying no. That creates more problems than it's worth. So I think you got to balance that. I just don't know that FSU was in love with him. I think this is more a matter of expanding the board and him being a kid that is valuable enough to go ahead and expand it in such a fashion.
How do you think he compares to Deontay Anderson?
I think he plays much better competition than Deontay Anderson. I like Deontay Anderson because I think he's more twitchy. Like, to me, Thomas Davis isn't super twitchy. He's a good athlete. I don't know if he's the most flexible dude, but he gets it done. I like his film. He's a very good football player. I think Deontay Anderson is maybe a better prospect in the sense of being a little bit more of a better athlete who can be developed mm-hmm. further, if that makes sense. I'm not trying to diminish one versus the other. I'm just saying I think one is a little bit more of a finished product who we know exactly what he is in watching film, and the other one's a guy who probably needs more development at the college game in Deontay Anderson. I like Deontay Anderson. He's another guy I threw out on the message board. Hell, that one I feel like was months ago at this point. I think if you're expanding the board, he is worth the look.
Deontay Anderson, so
you're the one that started that on the message board. Oh. Thank you.
I don't know that I started it. I know that Hassani Harper, who I think you're familiar with down that way, does a mm-hmm. lot of stuff for kids in the Polk County area. He put Deontay's film out there a few months ago. I watched it. I liked it. You know, I think DN's one of those spots, kind of like offensive tackle sometimes, where you take a kid that you see something in athletically and you have to develop them. Sometimes that busts on you and you don't get anything out of it. But sometimes you also get a guy who suddenly turns freakish and develops into something pretty special in a few years. I think Deontay's one of those kids who kind of falls into that realm.
All right, so I had one more name for you guys and I want to talk big picture about it, but Jamal Williams from Cardinal Gibbons is just someone that I know FSU has spoken with. I caught up with him about a week or so ago. No offer yet. Probably in that next wave of guys, if you do see offers like in another couple of weeks, I think there's still an evaluation process on him. They're not quite as high on him, but fitting the bill with some of the other defensive ends we've seen, similarly built where he's like 6'4", long arms, a little gangly, has room to fill out. And I think you don't know quite what he's going to be yet. Probably why there's no offer yet from Florida State, but someone to keep an eye on. Josh, why do you think there have been this influx of offers at defensive end in the last week or so? Like, what do you make of the expansion of the board in such a, I guess, rapid period to have that many offers or that much new interest in such a short period of time?
Well, there is a period about a week or two ago where the three of us were sitting down trying to figure out the defensive end board. And we're like, you know, nobody on here looks like they're legitimately in play for Florida State, or not a lot. So this made a lot of sense to see this kind of wave of offers, which might not be completely over yet either. You know, today's only Tuesday morning that we're recording this. We've seen, what, three offers in the last 4 or 5 days. So I'm not ruling this out, but it just made sense. I mean, it was something that had to happen. If you were a realist and you looked at the board, you knew that FSU was either fading or out of it for a bunch of these guys. And there needed to be some new names. There needed to be a new wave of offers. And here we are. We'll see where it stands at the end of the week. There could be a few more.
Yeah. And they have a commitment from Brandon Jennings. He's capable of playing the Fox position. A lot of people think that's what he'll play at FSU. They have a commitment from Josh Farmer, a little bit more of a big body defensive end. Obviously Sean Bray is a guy that we feel pretty good about where FSU stands with. And then Zion Reeves is a guy that they've been in with a long time, North Carolina kid. They are battling like an NC State, for example, for him. But he doesn't seem to be in a major rush. I know the communication has been consistent with him and FSU. So I think that was kind of your strong core. But the issue is the guys on the peripheral of that, the guys just outside that group who would be your plan B, your next guy up, that list has completely diminished in recent weeks. And I think that's why you're seeing – a few new names thrown on there. You know, we saw him offer Christian Zachary about a month ago, but he immediately came out with a short list about a week later that FSU wasn't part of. So that was kind of a very short-lived, we're trying to make an effort here kind of guy. So I think that's why you're seeing the Kyren Montgomerys and stuff like that. And I think a guy like Deontay Anderson, who we've mentioned, is another guy who might fall into that realm.
Yeah, and I wrote about him on Sunday. Deontay said he speaks regularly with Coach Odell at FSU. No offer yet, but they are, you know, they are talking to him. They're engaged with them. We'll see what happens. He doesn't know when or if that offer will come.
Odell back in Polk County, all is right in the world. You should put in, Josh, a crystal ball for Byron Turner. You're looking for some CBs to drop. There you go.
Yeah, I know. I spoke to him, though. I just wasn't – I mean, I'm not going to say, like, FSU's a long shot there. I just think that – the newness of the all. I don't think, you know, you talk to a kid, you can kind of get that feeling. And I just didn't get that feeling that he's on the verge of committing.
Okay. Yeah. And it's tougher to decipher in this climate because a lot of times when you offer a kid, when a kid would be like, well, I want to get over there as soon as possible and see it. And, you know, I got a great relationship with Coach Yak and I want to spend some time with him in person and meet the rest of the staff. When those kind of comments come, you're like, ooh, that turns the radar on. That can't happen right now. So, you know, that kind of hurts. The virtual environment is not as easy to read a kid as the environment of I'm going to hop in the car, drive 7 hours because I really like this freaking school. That shows authenticity in the fact that a kid, you know, is enamored with a particular school.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's go to – well, all right. We can't talk about one position's recruiting board without talking about offensive line. I feel like we just have to address the offensive line board every single episode in which we discuss recruiting. I think the most – noteworthy tidbit from the past week is Raekwon Buckley getting an offer from Florida State. So I wanted to make sure that I was throwing it to the right person. Chris, you wrote about Buckley in that offer. Please discuss.
Yeah, it came across on June 26. Josh had kind of dropped the hint on, I think it was a Monday before that they were getting pretty close. They had the virtual visit with him. I asked him what the offer means, got straight to it. He has a good relationship with Coach Atkins. They've been speaking for some time. This isn't a kid who just suddenly appeared. He's been on the radar since April. It means that they're definitely in a great spot with me, and I just want to go and visit, Buckley said of the offer. Consistent theme with him. He wants to take a few in-person visits before he makes any decisions. FSU is definitely one that's in this. Nebraska, I would say, is a school that's kind of in the pole position right now. Michigan State, Minnesota, or a couple others I know he likes a lot. You know, FSU has built a bond that a kid likes. He's a developmental body type. He actually, some people thought he was a defensive end, but he's going to end up being an offensive tackle in the college game. So, you know, that, I think that's a position FSU was in at offensive tackle to some degree, is they're looking at body types that are going to develop into offensive tackles more so than the ready-made, already known offensive tackles. So big tight ends, defensive ends who are transitioning to that position, who probably played both ways. Guys who are just smaller offensive tackles who still have body development to go. That's kind of what they're starting to kick tires on to some degree, in addition to others who have more regular, natural body types.
Kind of in that same mold, Chris, Mitchell Evans, tight end, who's what, like 6'7"?
Yeah, he's a 6'7" kid, definitely has the frame to bulk up and become an offensive tackle if you need it. He can also just be an inline blocker as a tight end, not saying he can't play that position too. He's supposed to release a top 10 on July 1st is what he told me yesterday. He said that could change if more offers come in. He's one of these kids that's not real, you know, tight on the 10 and not going to consider anybody else. But he said as of right now, that's the plan. He's a fairly recent FSU offer as well. There is some mutual interest there. We'll see if they make the top 10. I don't know that it's a slam dunk, but I think it's probably likely.
All right, and then Josh, your boy, Michael Mislinski, mm-hmm. get it right? Did I nail it?
Yeah, he's a guard center. He's ranked as the number 12 center in 24/7 Sports. I ran a story on him. I think it was maybe last Monday or Tuesday. He took, maybe it was the week before, but he took a visit to Florida State's campus with his family. No contact, no face-to-face contact with the FSU staff, but he did FaceTime with FSU. You know, we ran a story on Knowles 24/7. You guys can check that out. But since then, Mislinski has gone on visits to Texas, Iowa, Maryland, and I believe he's going to try and Duke as well. And I think he's going to try to take one or two more before making a mid-July decision.
Yeah, this is amazing that a kid is taking, like, that it's news that a kid is taking on campus visits right now. Like, that was such a unique tidbit that you dropped a week ago. It's strange times.
Yeah, and I think FSU is going to have a couple more this month. It'll be after the July 4th holiday, but I'm expecting probably like 2 to 3 more visitors to come on their own dime and do this. Florida State can't let them into the Moore facility. They can't be with them during the campus visit, but they can FaceTime with them. They can tell them where to go. They can tell them where to eat and all sorts of things. So Mislinski is doing this mainly because his father is the head strength coach of the Jacksonville Jags, and they're heading to fall camp in mid-July. The family wants to be able to, you know, take these visits together and then make a decision. So it does make sense.
The schools I know he wants to see, I think he's going a week after the 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
Iowa and Michigan State are two of the ones. And Iowa's a big player here. Iowa's a school before everything that happened there recently, specifically with strength coach. I think they were the pole position school. I don't know that still be the case. I think Texas has made a surge here. I think he's interested in several others that he has on that list. He shared a list of, I think, 8 to 10 schools. He doesn't intend to narrow that down and share a short list before.
Here, I got it right here. Here's the schools that he says are recruiting the hardest: Iowa, Texas, Maryland, Michigan State, Missouri, Arkansas, Oregon, Duke, and Florida State. Iowa and Michigan State will be the final two schools he visits before making a decision.
Yeah.
Now, the people are going to want to know, is he a take for Florida State? I would say yes, he is a take for Florida State. If he called up Mike Norvell and said that he wanted to come, they would accept his commitment. With Jake Slaughter and Bryson Estes on the commit list, he's not a main priority. We just spent this whole podcast talking about offensive tackle. So he's about 6'2". He's an interior guy all the way, quality interior guy. FSU would take him, but this isn't what the focus is on right now for the Noles.
There's one more body on the offensive line board that we want to talk about. That's Cameron Scott. someone I liked his film, or I should say his highlights, quite a bit when FSU started expressing interest. And he, I think, wrote on that about 2 weeks ago. But still, Chris, no offer today, correct?
No offer yet. A lot of contact with Coach Atkins, a lot of talking with him. He did think he was going to get on the horn with Norvell about a week ago. That ended up not coming about that day, but he did talk to Atkins again that day. He's a little bit short for an offensive tackle. He's listed 6'4", 300, 21 pounds. He told me he's shedding a little bit of that weight. He's working more towards the 300 and 330 type. He's a road grader. He's a physical, straightforward, put you on your ass kind of kid. He's definitely a great guard. I think he's capable of being a tackle. He's a kid that's very interested in FSU offer. I do think if they offered, they would become probably his favorite. He has some ties to the South Georgia area. He lived there before moving out to Texas. So there's definitely things working in FSU's favor with a Texas kid where he wouldn't be as far of a reach as you would normally think with such a kid from the Lone Star State.
I wonder what the arm length and the wingspan is. That's probably a pretty important part of that puzzle and trying to figure out whether he is a tackle, because that's what matters to the staff more than anything.
I think Scott's a kid where if he could get on campus like in a normal climate and they were able to get a better feel for him and see him, the whole offer debate would be over instantaneously. It would be done or not. And I think some of that is measurements.
Interesting. That'll be an interesting one to follow. Let's see. I think that's everything right now for recruiting. Anything else, fellas, before we take our commercial break?
Yeah, I'd like to provide a little update. I made a call to make sure that Leonard Taylor, defensive tackle from Palmetto, that everybody has been going back and forth on why this guy doesn't have an offer. We've tried to say on the site in as many ways, it doesn't matter if he has an offer or not. If you've watched Florida State football for the last 3 to 4 years, this five-star defensive tackle from Miami is not coming to Florida State. But fans wanted to make this a big issue. So for the last 2 or 3 weeks, every, you know, nonstop, it pops up. Why isn't Leonard Taylor offered? You know, so I just said, you know what? I'm going to end this. I made a call. I said, hey, is Leonard Taylor offered? He said, the kid from Palmetto? Hell yeah. Does he have interest? And I said, nope, just checking. Thanks. And I just wanted to put it to bed. You know, Florida State needs talent. They need defensive tackles. If there's a five-star in Miami, of course he has an offer. The reason why he's not considering FSU isn't because he doesn't have an offer. It's because what FSU's done on the field and off the field, meaning all these coaching changes over the last couple of years. So just to put that to bed, FSU has offered Leonard Taylor. Let's all move on. There's much bigger things to worry about than this.
One other thing.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
Running back Jalen White, pretty high target for FSU at position. Supposed to drop a top 10 today. I fully expect FSU to be in it. I will admit I was supposed to talk to him yesterday, and he stood me up like a girl wanting to go prom. So I don't know for a fact that FSU's in the top 10, but I expect him to be.
What's the most hurt you've ever been, Chris, by a kid like ghosting you? I imagine there's been some long term relationships in which things just go silent.
I don't know. I can't think of that at 9 a.m. on a morning. I'm pretty good at moving on to the next relationship.
You're probably not even hurt. You don't have any feelings, as we it's well documented, other than grumpy. All right, let's take don't look at me like that. We're gonna take a quick commercial break, and then we're gonna be back with Josh's favorite segment, a countdown of the 40 most important players of the 2020 season. Let's go.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, welcome back to On the Bench. Josh, you ready for this?
Yeah, I thought I missed the first installment of this.
I tried telling Josh we were going to do this a week ago. He's like, that's a terrible idea. We're going to go through it fairly rapid fire. And listen, if we get some feedback and people say this sucks and it's boring because they already
know, let's go.
If they like it, we'll do the other half later on. Before we get to that, the 2020 season, we're all assuming it's going to happen right now. Like, that's the working assumption. We know FSU is preparing for it. People ask us that a lot on the message board. Like, I don't, man, like, no one knows exactly what's going to happen. The world's changing every single day. So I just want to put that out there. Chris, there was a question on the financial impact if football season doesn't happen on the message board recently. It's been asked before for podcast questions. I think it's just worth you to go ahead and explain it how it was explained to you, what no football season would mean for Florida State financially.
David Coburn compared it to a nuclear bomb going off. It would be catastrophic. It's a huge piece of the pie. It helps to fund a lot of sports. It helps to make sure the program's running in a proper fashion. It's not just revenue of ticket sales and booster sales, but it's also TV money. And that's the biggest issue. I mean, I think you can get away with not having people in the seats to a degree because of TV money. That's going to help you stay afloat. But, you know, zero revenue from football would be devastating. And I think we've already seen across the landscape in college athletics that law schools are preparing for either a massive decrease in revenue or a loss of all revenue by cutting other sports. I obviously don't think FSU wants to get to that point. I think FSU loves the fact that they have a healthy, fertile athletic program as a whole, and that they have, you know, the sports they do have, which FSU doesn't have too many sports. There are schools that have far more sports than FSU fields. I think FSU is very happy with what they field and would like to stay that way. I don't think that's something that they're at a point where they're considering it. But in my last conversation with AD Coburn, he did say they are taking into account every scenario possible for the football season with regards to when it would start, how it would operate, how fan attendance would be, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm sure from that perspective, they're also taking into account every financial impact possible by whatever decision is made. But I don't think anything with football season is truly going to be close to cemented before July 15th. July 15th to the 22nd is an important week. That's when schools are supposed to basically get back into camp mode. If there's a halt of things at that point, then that's a major concern for the starting point of early September.
I think FSU has been pretty diligent in making sure. I mean, obviously we know that they're testing players regularly. And yeah, I think Coach Norvell has tried to make it like you can't keep players from going out and living their lives like to an extent, right? But tried to express like what a halt would mean for this football program. Like, be careful, especially over July 4th coming up. Yeah, just be mindful of where you're at and what that would mean for the football program if there were a bunch of guys testing positive like at a Clemson or LSU or whatnot. So, and just real quick on the financial aspect of things, the financial hierarchy for college athletics, I assume most of our listeners know this, but maybe not. The way it typically works, this is kind of cookie cutter, so it doesn't apply to everywhere, but this is generally baseball pays for itself in revenue. It makes up what it spends. It pays for itself, usually breaks even or comes in the black a little bit. Basketball usually makes a profit. Men's basketball specifically makes a profit. Football then pays for pretty much every other Olympic sport, men's and women's, throughout the college landscape. College football is king financially when it comes to athletic department budgets. So yeah, it would be catastrophic if there was no semblance of a football season for Florida State's athletic department and athletic departments everywhere. All right, happier things. Let's move on to the 40 most important player list. We did it this year. Usually it's me just kind of asking Chris and Josh and Zach their thoughts, and then I put the list together and they kind of will make some suggestions. But this year I wanted to incorporate all of them into the actual like final cementing of the rankings, as well as Bud Elliott, Trey Rowland, who was doing the role cast at the time. Now it's just some random guy who's doing a list for us without a tie to a podcast. Just kidding, Trey, I love you. And Wayne McGahee of the Tallahassee Democrat, who also does the top 40 list of the Tallahassee Democrats. Seemingly every year after we do one, they do a most important list too, and then change the numbers to match ours the next year. So next year we'll do 50. I'm sure Wayne will be doing a top 50 2 years after that. Right, buddy? Okay. For our list, though, we did the composite scores. We got 40 through 21 today. That's already on Knowles 24/7. This is a chance to kind of flesh out our rankings, talk about it together here. Number 40 was True Thompson, the defensive tackle. I had him at 38th. Chris had him at 43rd. And Josh, low man, 48th. I like True. I think he's a solid rotational piece, but this is before we knew Fabian Lovett was going to be around. I do wonder how that impacts True's spot in the rotation with Fabian Lovett, if eligible. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
I think he's pretty far down there on the depth chart this year with Lovett in there.
He's part of the third part of the rotation, but I think there's still value to True.
Because he's a situational guy is what I meant.
Maurice Smith at 39. I had him at 50th, Knee 44th, Josh 39th. Josh, you're a little bit bullish on Maurice Smith. You think he's going to get some reps in the rotation, interior offensive line, I imagine.
I had him at 39, and you guys had him at what?
I had him at 50th. Chris had him at 44th.
Yeah, I think the offensive line needs help. So I put him up there.
I don't like the segment so far.
I think he's a solid two deep guy, and for the love of God, they need a two deep at that position.
Yeah, here's my thinking for the reason that I put him there in order of importance. The center play has been so bad at Florida State. I know I have Bavion up there, and we'll get to that when I get there.
Oh yes, we will. Yes, we will.
So what I was thinking was Maurice Smith could actually be, you know, we could see a good amount of Maurice Smith possibly this year if things don't go well with the guys ahead of him. And I think that, you know, that could boost his importance on the team if that happens.
Hell, he started two games, I think, at least one game late last season at guard. So yeah, it's not unrealistic, Josh.
Right.
Similar. 38th, Dennis Briggs moving into defensive tackle. He's been really solid every single time he's touched the field. Like he's not spectacular, but he's just been consistent. I had him at 40th. Knee had him at 38th. Josh at 34th. Don't have to spend a ton of time there. It's not a huge variance between us. I think we all kind of see him as a solid rotational piece. I want to go over this guy, though, at 37 a little bit more. Jordan Wilson, tight end, UCLA transfer. Not on campus yet. He told us a few weeks ago, late June, maybe late July at the absolute latest. So still in the time frame where I wouldn't worry about that yet. I had him at 36. Chris had him at 34th. Josh did not list Jordan Wilson. Nee, why don't you shame Josh for me?
I'm not here to shame my friend, but I think that, you know, FSU is going to use tight end more. I think we've spoken about that with Coach Norvell's preference with that position. And while Cam McDonald is clearly the guy who's probably the starter who has the most experience, especially within the team dynamic, I think that's pretty clear. After that, it falls off a cliff. So I think Jordan Wilson was brought in for a reason. Thus, I put him at 34. I can't believe Josh completely forgot about him.
Josh just forgot about him, right?
I did not forget about
him. You didn't forget about him? Okay, I'm proud of you because I actually thought you forgot about him.
He had about 200 snaps last year at UCLA on a bad UCLA team. He caught seven balls, 17. I know there's a seven in there, but he didn't have a whole lot of production. And I'm just, you know, for what he is, he's coming in for 1 year. I'm not holding out hope that he's going to be a game changer for Florida State. I don't know how much we see of him. I'm not real high on him.
I think the fact that he's in my top 40 doesn't mean he's a game changer. I don't think FSU has a whole lot of those. So I think he's more a guy that's a dependable 2D player.
And I think for context, when we define important, and we all define it a little bit different personally, but there's a difference between thinking this guy is the 30th best player on the roster versus he's going to play a role that's pushes up his value some. So you're just trying to weigh, at least that's how I do. I try to weigh value at the position they play along with upside and production and try to blend those two as possible.
No, I just try to take into account their importance to the team.
That's a fair way to do it. Hey, this is all our own individual lists. So we're just going to make fun of it a little bit. I will say this, Josh. I was worried that you were going to forget about a lot of guys when we did this list. And it didn't happen as much as I thought. But honestly,
I don't think I forgot about anybody.
No, you were good. Bud forgot about more guys than you did. So and Zach left off.
Zach forgot about one.
We're going to get to that in a minute or two. And I had to bite the bullet for it. But Yeah, you had, Josh, you had Wyatt Rector at 50th on your list, because we went actually 50 guys just to get a little few more names in there when doing the calculations. So
yeah, because he can play two positions.
Yeah, I mean, maybe even three if he does a little like
D-tackle. What do you think?
No, like fullback, kind of like H-back or whatever. Move him around a little bit. All right, 36, Derek McClendon. I had him at 30th, knee 39th. And Josh, 37th. We don't have to spend a lot of time there. Not a huge variance. I like McClendon a little bit more because I think he's probably the third best defensive end on the roster right now and might actually be one of the better pass rush threats, or at least gives you the potential to pass rush. They don't have a whole lot of that on the roster. So hence, he's a pretty important backup player to me. 35, that's the one that Zach forgot. That's Brendan Gant. Technically Zach was the lowest at not having him list at all, but I had Brendan Gant at 49th. He had him at 29th, Josh 31st. Zach said he would have had him in the 20s had he remembered.
Explain yourself for that one, Brendan. That's a wild take to have him that low.
Plus, I want Gant to know exactly who dragged him down. So if he puts one of us on his ass, it's you.
Brendan Gant, best case scenario this season is the backup boundary safety to Jaden Lars would be in my mind. That's the best case. Worst case is he's the third string if they put Hamza Nasruddin at boundary safety behind Jaden and Hamza. And last season, Brendan Gant was one of the lowest ranked via PFF scholarship players on defense. So I think there's value to him. I think in sub packages, you can certainly find a way to get him on the field. I just think he has a little ways to go before I'm saying he's one of the top reserves on your roster, especially when you have so many safeties. Florida State has a lot of capable safeties, not a ton of proven dynamic ones outside of Hamza, but yeah, that's why I didn't think there was an immense value at that position. It's safety. It's kind of, you can hide someone there too, if needed.
Sanone got swallowed up by the numbers. He fell in love with that PFF number.
I did. I always do. Jaleel McCray at 34 on the list, the backup linebacker, maybe even a starter this year. I had him at 28th. Knee had him at 37th. Josh at 33rd. I think we're all kind of thinking that he's a really important backup. Correct, Chris?
Yeah, and I'll admit, linebacker and DB, there's a lot of bodies there, and it's kind of tough to decipher who you love. Like, I know I love Emmett Rice, but then after that at linebacker, it's kind of tough to decipher who's the next guy. Like, I don't love Leonard Warner, but he has more experience, so I'd probably rank him higher than a guy like Jaleel McCray. But truthfully, I think McCray might hold more value than a Leonard Warner.
Certainly more long-term value, because Warner's right now a senior, and Jaleel McCray is a true sophomore, and he had his struggles last year as well. But has potential if he continues to show improvement like he has so far this offseason, which is why I think I'm a little higher on him than you guys. I like the upside there. Tied for 32nd. I was going to say at 32nd, but he's tied. We have two guys at 32. First off, wide receiver Ontario Wilson. I have him at 46th, knee at 22nd, Josh at 27th. I'm lower on him than you guys. Josh, why are you higher? Well, why are you, I guess, normal? Why am I low? Ontario Wilson, I don't know. Why am I cranky? Why don't I like
him? You're higher. You like him more?
Him less, apparently, a lot less.
Like, what am I missing? Like Ontario Wilson less. Well, I had him where I have him because I think he's like the production guy. He's not very flashy, but he's experienced. He's consistent, and he gets it done.
Yeah, a guy like Warren Thompson can blow him out of water athletically because he's more special. But I know Pokey's more reliable, so I went with Pokey higher.
I think why
plus Keyshawn is hurt. I love Keyshawn, but that whole wide receiver dynamic with him was a little tough because I'm not sure, are they going to have him for 4 games, 8 games, 12 games? You know, I don't know that. So I hesitated to rank him higher because I don't know how much availability he'll have.
And for those following at home, Keyshawn Helton hasn't been released yet. We're at 18 today at the time of recording this podcast. Brady Scott's at 18. So Keyshawn Helton will be in the top 20. And that's him coming off a pretty serious knee injury. My thing, I think, with the wide receivers is Mike Norvell has traditionally run a pretty truncated offense when it comes to the wide receivers. There's about 3 to 5 guys that rotate regularly. Previously, under Kendall Briles and Willie Taggart, they wanted to go like 10 deep at wide receiver and just keep rotating bodies in. To me, that kind of suppresses some of the value of someone like an Ontario Wilson. Yeah, he does a lot of things well. But when you're trying to get dynamic playmakers the ball, I think there's just 3 or 4 more guys who can do a little bit more with the football than Pokey can. Not to say I don't like him. He was in my top 50, but But yeah, I didn't view him as like a starter. Like Chris has him at 22nd. That's technically starting territory when you're looking at 11 guys on each side of the ball. Someone else who was fairly polarizing among us, and this is also tied at 32nd, quarterback Chuba Purdy. I have him at 21st. Chris has him at 48th. And Josh, not listed.
I should have had him higher, plain and simple.
Really? We're okay. Yeah, yeah. You could do a redo. Where would you put him?
Probably 30.
Okay.
Because I do think he's going to end up starting games this year. I do think he's going to end
up. Yeah, that would make him pretty damn important. Right. If he's the starting quarterback, even for a game.
But I also don't think that's going to be the case going into the season.
Yeah.
So.
Josh, but
yeah,
what about
I should add him higher.
Yeah, I mean, if we go back and after the season and do the 40 most important players, I might have him higher depending on if he plays or not. I guess that's the rub. Do you think he's going to play or not?
So that was why I kind of hedged my bets and put him at 21st, as I figured mm-hmm. there's a decent chance he's going to play. And if he does, he has to be represented to some extent or another. Yeah, I think he'll play. I don't know if he'll start, but I think they'll try to find ways to get him involved. And hell, yeah. I mean, it's reasonable if James Blackman comes out and struggles that after that bye week, we could see Chuba Purdy. I don't think that would surprise anyone at all. I know some people who cover the team believe that we'll see Chuba Purdy starting in week one. I think that's a little far-fetched, but I guess not out of the realm of possibility. Number 31, every single year there's a veteran safety that FSU fans just seem to really detest. Tyler Hunter, Nate Andrews, AJ Westbrook. Who else am I missing here, fellas?
Corey Mangum. Can't forget Corey Mangum.
That doesn't count.
You want to talk about despise? Jeez, do I have some stories? Not me. I was fine with the kid. The fan base, not so much.
We had a poster the other day. It said they were naming a new dog that they were getting, and I just started throwing out names of players who FSU fans had irrational hatreds for. D-Jax, Eberle, Mangum, Jeff Bowden would be a weird name for a dog. So, all right, Cyrus Fagan at 31 on our list. I had him at 42nd. Nee had him at 27th. Newberg at 24th. That's all backup territory, technically. Just maybe he starts at field safety. Maybe he's the second string field safety. Maybe he's the third or fourth string. I don't have a great feel at that position between him, Hampson Nasruddin, who I think we expect to start at one of the safety positions, obviously, just not sure which one and how they use them. Renardo Green, who else am I missing? Raymond Woody, the third, like between the four of those guys, like I think that lowers Cyrus's value some. That's why I'm a little lower on him than you two. This is the one I want to get into. I know Josh is going to have some explaining to do. Bavion Johnson comes in at 30th. Now, 30th doesn't seem that far off for Bavion. I had him at 41st. Nee had him at 40th. Just about everyone else had him in that range. He moves up almost 10 spots on the composite because Josh Newberg had Bavion Johnson at 6th. 6th. 6th.
Explain yourself, Newberg.
I think this is simple. I think, Brennan, you should have to explain it.
Wow.
Okay.
Tables have turned.
I'll explain it. So because
if you got into Newberg's brain, how would you explain it?
Well, I'll explain how it went down. I procrastinate in putting these together. I had the whole list, obviously, and then I do about...
You do not.
I procrastinate into... Oh, whatever.
You're bugging us the entire time to get it done because yours is done.
So when I text Josh the morning of I need to get Bavion Johnson's profile posted, I say, hey, you're the high man on Bavion. Can you write something on him? And he goes, yeah. Where do I have him? I said, 6th. And you go, 6th? So you didn't even believe your own bullshit.
But the reasoning behind it was this. It's kind of similar to Maurice Smith. Florida State's offensive line is so bad. If Bavion Johnson can be a shell of what we thought he was when we had him as the number one center in America, I mean, hell, if he could just get the snap back there consistently every time correctly, that would be he would be very important to Florida State's offensive line. But the play has been so bad at that position. If Bavion Johnson could come in, get his shit together, start playing like the four-star prospect that we thought he was, and be the anchor for that offensive line this season, he'd be hugely important to Florida State.
Josh is living in a world of if.
If ifs and buts were candies and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas.
Jordan, yeah. Young?
Yeah, I don't.
I'm not convinced he starts.
I'm just trying to convince you of why I had him 6th. I don't have to convince you of anything else.
I you know, I'm working with the theory that Andrew Bocelli's going to start there over Babian. Yeah,
in fairness of Josh, like if you think that someone else is going to start at center, you're going to have them higher than everyone else. Like, and Josh thinks Bavon Johnson can start, which is not wildly, like it's not crazy to think about. Bavon Johnson started at center most of last season.
It's also a bit of me hoping, Brendan. If we're being completely honest, okay. It's all a right. bit of me hoping.
I appreciate the transparency. There we go. That's fine. I appreciate the transparency. Number 29. I am bullish on this one. This is Jordan Young, wide receiver, redshirt sophomore. I have him at 19th, so I have him as a starter. Chris Knee has him at 28th. Josh Newberg, not listed. That is quite a big variance between all of us right there. We're talking about almost 10 between Chris and I, and then a 12 for Josh and Chris. I'll start by saying why I believe in Jordan Young, given that he hasn't done a ton. I put a lot of value into how someone finishes the season. Jordan Young started showing flashes at the end of last year, the bowl game against Arizona State before he got hurt. He made two really splashy plays against Syracuse late in the year. He kind of showed it. So I'm basing this a lot on potential, which I typically don't do. But what I liked, what I saw from him this spring was they put him in the slot. I think that's really interesting given his ability to make plays. I think that shows where he's valued in terms of Mike Norvell liking his versatility as someone who you want to get the ball to. So I think the staff sees something. I'm not sure where Keyshawn Helton is going to be in terms of his health at the beginning of the season. I would imagine that would be Keyshawn Helton's role. So that moves up Jordan Young for me. Mm-hmm. And Jordan Young also killed it in the offseason conditioning programs too, was someone that got that coveted black jersey, I think, before anyone else or as early as anyone else. So I put all those together and say I'm buying low on him, Josh. We like stocks. I'm buying low on him right now and the assumption that he is moving upwards in the right direction.
Yeah, I feel like you're just pumping him because that's – for me to not have him on the list, I just wasn't buying in this year. Everything was based on potential and highlights coming out of high school. We thought, oh, his freakish athleticism can get him on the field as a freshman. That wasn't the case. He wasn't very consistent. We didn't see a whole lot of him last year. I'm just not – and I know with Treshawn Harrison gone and the injury to Keyshawn Helton that he could see more opportunities. But I'm just not buying into the hype right now.
I'm leaning more Sinone because I know going into the spring, the staff was excited to see him out there. They sure believed he had put himself in a position to show some things.
Big thing with Jordan Young still is confidence too. He's admitted to that. He lost confidence in high school in his junior season. He lost confidence in his freshman season at Florida State. And he's admitted to that both times. We see though, once he gets going and starts believing in himself, what he can be, the amusement park highlight film, pretty good example of it. Yeah, this is a potential take by me. That's why I have him so high, but we'll see. At the end of the year when I'm right and Josh is wildly incorrect. Number 28, Travis J. I have him at 26. Chris has him at 20th. Josh at 35th. Nee, you're the middleman. No, wait, I'm the middleman. You're the high man. Chris, explain why you're high on him.
I think Travis J is Johnny Badass. I think you can put him on an island and he can dominate his opponent one-on-one. He's athletically off the charts. He's a guy who academically, I think, is the only reason we didn't see him on the field last year.
And Josh,
I think he is capable of, I'll put this plain and simple, I think he's capable of being FSU's second best corner.
Mm-hmm.
He was someone I think that was going to get a lot of reps with the first team offense if the spring continued. I'll leave it at that. Josh, maybe a little more skeptical of him being a contributor this year.
Yeah, that's it. I think he's going to be a star at Florida State. I'm just not sure this is the year that we see him break out, but it could be.
That boundary cornerback position is going to be really interesting because Akeem Dent's probably going to be there. I don't know where Miko Dotson fills in. I think it's more as a backup and nickelback, but that'll be an interesting position to monitor. Number 27th, Renardo Green ends up moving to safety in the spring. I believe he probably stays there long-term, but curious to see if they want to continue with that experiment moving forward. I think we all under the assumption that's what's going to happen. I had him at 32nd, Knee at 30th, Josh at 32nd. We're all right around the same area. Josh and I are actually in the same spot, so no need to really go into that one. 26, Warren Thompson. All right, another big difference here. I am at 48th for Warren. Chris is at 36. Josh, loving the Tampa area kids, 18th.
813, baby, 813.
I mean, he played on Team Tampa. What am I going to do?
Is that why you shamelessly – and you had Bavion higher too. I'm starting to kind of catch on.
No, Bavion's not a Tampa guy. Bavion's Lakeland.
He's Pope.
You guys rented him sometimes.
No, we rented Derwin James.
That's right. It was Derwin.
That's good. I do spend.
I do think Warren is maybe the biggest swing guy of anybody on offense in the sense of if he can live up to being what he's capable of being with some level of consistency, he can probably be the second, third most important receiver on this team and arguably the third or fourth most important offensive player on this team.
Yeah.
But we've never seen it actually happen, so I think it's tough for us to buy, and I know it certainly was for me.
I think Warren can be as good as Warren wants to be. We'll just see what that is this season.
I'm happy that we do the composite because, like, if I had left Warren Thompson completely off my list, people would have lost their shit. So I'm happy that there is something to kind of bring him to 26 range, which I don't think is crazy. Like Chris said, there is certainly a scenario in which Warren Thompson comes out and is a top 20 most important player on this team at the end of the season. Like, I don't think that's crazy for Josh to have him that high. I couldn't go super high on two young wide receivers that haven't done a lot of anything. I had to kind of pick between Jordan Young and Warren Thompson in my mind, and I went with Jordan Young. And that's why I had him.
I look forward to Warren yelling at you on the practice fields.
Brandon Sinone ain't ready, instead of Boise State ain't ready. Remember that?
Right. Oh, memories.
Moving on. Nico Dotson at 25th. That's the FAU transfer at cornerback. I have him at 24th, Knee at 23rd, Newberg at 19th. We're all pretty similar. I think it was some of the other guys. I think like Bud had Nico Dotson fairly low, and I think Wayne did as well, if I'm not mistaken, and like in the 40 range. I think you don't bring in a graduate transfer with 1 year of eligibility to just be a backup. I think he's going to be heavily used in sub packages, and I think he is someone who can legitimately give Asante Samuel some time off, some reps, or you can move Asante Samuel around if you want to as well. But I have fairly high on Nico Dotson as like a really high important sub package player, which is where he is in that 25 range. Let's see. All right. Andrew Bocelli at 24. I had him at 23rd, Knee at 25th, Newberg 29th. So Newberg kind of hedging his bets a little bit. He has two centers in the top 30.
They could be guards.
Okay. All right. I think me and I, fair knee that we both think he's probably the starting center, but we're not super sold on either Bocelli or Maurice Smith maybe pushing, or sorry, Bavion. Bavion and Maurice Smith pushing him.
Josh made sure to get Bavion in there.
Don't you say Bavion's name wrong!
Don't sleep on Bavion at number 6.
Number 23, Leonard Warner. This is, I don't know if I like the segment or hate it right now. It's been entertaining, actually. Number 23, Leonard Warner. I had him at 31st, Knee at 32nd, Newberg at 21st. So, New, you basically think he
experience,
is.
Experience, yeah.
Low end starter.
To me, he's a dependable depth guy, but good God, there's a lot of guys on the team that I think bring a lot more to that position.
That was one of the more polarizing names so far from our reader response. I wish I had the poll ahead of me, but people were not happy that we had him at 23rd, which if you think about it,
I can understand.
I wasn't happy we had him at 23rd.
You would definitely understand being a fan, not being happy about him being
that still puts him in as technically a backup. If we're breaking it down, 11 and 11 on each side of the ball, 23rd is the primary backup, right?
And at that moment, it sunk in that 8-4 is really a reality.
We've had some arguments, me specifically, because I like getting into arguments with the message boarders more than you guys do. You just don't interact with that aspect at all. And he just shuts that shit down and Josh just ignores it is the dynamic typically.
Till the end of the month when he needs his post.
When he does ask me anything threats shamelessly.
Oh, man.
That's when I said procrastinating earlier about putting these lists together. Josh, like, rolled his eyes because the ultimate procrastinator knows what procrastinating
is. Well, I just get into these awful, awful cycles of, like, the end of the month, I got to write all these stories and make all these board posts. And then the first of the month comes, and I'm just, like, so exhausted from crushing it at the end of the month that I take, like, the next couple days off, and here I am in the same situation again the next month.
It's an abusive cycle. But to my to what I was saying, people are talking about the roster being better than what it's been in recent years. And I think that's some Kool-Aid drinking. I think the top end of the roster, which we'll get to if we decide to do another segment on this in a couple days, I think the top end of the roster is actually pretty darn good. But I think the back end of the roster, I talked about this on a podcast we had Wayne on. I think the back end of the roster is better than what it's been in recent years. I think the 20 through 40 range to me is where there's just a lot of what ifs, a lot of variables, a lot of guys who are either multi-year starters who really haven't performed very well, or a lot of guys who just haven't shown that they can do it yet, that are like redshirt freshmen or redshirt sophomores that are unknowns. I think Leonard Warner is a really good example of what I'm talking about. You're talking about someone in the 20 range or 30 range who makes people uncomfortable that he's that high simply because he's been one. He was not very good as a defensive end type of player last year, moved back to middle linebacker and at least was serviceable, but even then a little up and down to be that for this fan base. I think that's kind of understanding of where you are right now. You have a lot of guys who are maybe serviceable in certain spots, but not a whole lot of game changers outside of maybe the top 10 players on the roster. And that's just kind of the life you live right now at Florida State until you start turning the roster over more. Is that fair, Chris?
Yeah, the only thing I would add is I think the transfers raise the floor. I think that's the best thing the transfers did for FSU. I do think the worst-case scenario is far less bad than it was going into January.
Yeah, I think the floor is higher, and I think the ceiling's a little higher too. I think just the middle ground is where I'm a little more uncomfortable with the roster, which those guys ultimately are ones that make or break a season when in terms of depth and whatnot.
I think FSU is capable of fielding a pretty dang good 22 outside of maybe like offensive tackle. Obviously, I think there's some warts there. But I think from a 44 perspective, a 2D perspective, there's a lot of question marks.
I agree. All right, we're almost done here, fellas. Josh, I really appreciate you've given your A game for this. I did not think that was going to happen. I'm pleasantly surprised. Akeem Dent, number 22. We think he's probably going to be a cornerback in this scheme. He played primarily safety last year until he moved to corner late in the season, looked more comfortable there. I had Akeem at 25th, Nee at 19th, Josh at 25th. Not a whole lot of change there, but Nee, interesting. You had him at 19 and you had Travis Jay at 20th. So you kind of hedged your bets a little bit with those two guys, assuming they're playing the same position.
Yeah, lack of a spring kind of did me in there with regards to going all in on one or backing off one of the other ones. I do think Akeem Dent learns how to catch an interception this year, which I think instantly raises his value.
It's funny, if he ends up catching two or three of the six or seven interceptions that he dropped,
people are much more in love with him.
We're talking, right now, I mean, talking about such a small, how little of a sample size that is. But yeah, we're talking about him much differently. I actually had Akeem at 25th and Travis Jay at 26th. So like I was kind of in the same mindset of you, Chris, just a little bit lower on them. But I kind of went with the same back-to-back because I wasn't sure which was going to emerge. Finally, this is an interesting name, one that I think was very polarizing. I know Warchant does their list, and they were much higher on Kalen LeBourne, the running back, than our group was. 22nd for me. 26th for Nee, 17th for Newberg. I think Wayne really bumped him down there, and pretty much because Wayne asked to interview him and didn't get a chance to interview him, so just assume that he's in the doghouse because of that. I don't know. I think 21st is a fairly like fair place for him. I had him at 22nd, but I don't understand like the people thinking he's like a top 10 most important player. Do you guys get that?
I expect Jay Sean Corbin to be FSU starting running
back. I do too. I think that's it. Josh, you were higher on Kalen. Do you think he's going to have the start to kind of show everyone what we've heard about him over the last few years? Yeah, take the off of mute.
You praise Josh, and then he drives it into the side of a mountain.
he was talking to me. He looked like a fish breathing for air without making any noise. Just, I guess fish don't breathe for air, for water, right? Is there oxygen in water?
Yes.
Okay. So they are breathing air.
That's a gilly question.
I like Kalen Wayborn, but not as much as Jay Sean Corbin. I do think he'll have ample opportunity, though, because they need explosive weapons on offense. Corbin's not going to be able to do it by himself. So I do think Wayborn has a good bit of importance to this team.
All right. So if you like this segment, give us a 5-star review on iTunes, please, saying that you want to hear the second half of the top 40 countdown between the three of us. If you did not like it, give us a 5-star review and say that you don't want to hear the second half of the top 40 countdown. All right. That's how we're gonna. That's how we're gonna move.
Fair is fair.
Yes, yes. But we'll listen to the criticism for this. We'll be open to it. But it has to be with 5-star review for me to be able to listen and to digest it. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it, Josh. Thanks for hanging in there to the bitter end.
Yeah, I'd like to. I'd like to say something before we get off of here.
Okay.
Right now, Knowles 24/7 is running a 50% off promo. Oh, yeah. That gets you 50% off your annual membership to Knowles 24/7. We've got a ton of recruiting information, a ton of team stuff coming up. The season's coming. This essentially gets you locked into Knowles 24/7 for $1 for the first month. So check it out. There's a promo on the front page. If you guys got any questions, hit us up.
Stick in the landing!
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.